Two comics, three topics, 10 minutes each. The perfect podcast for your modern lifestyle. I'm here with Brian Miller on the other end.
Hello.
And today we're going to be talking. Brian has a soft pretzel story.
Bad tease. It's a symbolic. It's what the pretzel stands for.
It's usually we only do hard pretzel news here on the rule of three, but we got a little soft pretzel story coming up later. Also, the man who is being credited with inventing rock and roll is no longer with us. We're going to spend a little bit of time talking with him, but right now there has been a bit of a scandal. In which one of the celebrities who people pretty much knew was not as liberal as the rest of Hollywood, Mr. Tim Allen, came out and said something shocking. It's his latest show, Last Man Standing. Am I getting that right?
Yes.
His last show is he plays a conservative dad. It's and. You know, at 60 some years old, conservative probably sounds a little more believable than dad, but but that's the way Hollywood goes. I understand that Goldie Hawn is Amy Schumer's mother.
Which, yeah, that's true. There needs to be a prefix on there.
Go ahead and do the math on that one. anyway, Tim Allen was suspected of being conservative. Now he is full out conservative, and claims that the mood in Hollywood is reminiscent of 1930s Germany. And of course, everyone right away jumps on the same boat and says, "Oh my gosh, he's comparing us to Hitler." And from what I understand, Tim Allen was very careful to say, "I'm not comparing it to Nazi Germany. I'm comparing it to 1930s Germany, the Germany where there was lots of suspicion, and people started hiding certain behaviors and activities and leaving the country, and that's the Germany he compared it to. Not the he's not claiming that that Hollywood is setting up camps." Though, as dark as the humor would be there, I wonder what a Hollywood concentration camp would look like.
Probably the same food.
Tap water.
Yeah. Same food. Except for no bread. But, yeah, I was sort of surprised that people were in an uproar about this. I don't know. We all knew what Tim Allen thought already. And there's – obviously, I think the analogy is maybe not an ideal one. But it's also the one everybody goes to all the time. How many times have we heard that in, basic analogy?
Exactly. There has been – Godwin has been invoked pretty much since the beginning of the Trump campaign. It's with the outrage that's being caused. Even if he was saying it's like Nazi Germany here in Hollywood right now, are they claiming that only the left has the right to the monopoly? They own that trademark? That's their intellectual property? It's like, no. Only we are allowed to call people Nazis. If you call people a Nazi, that proves you're a Nazi.
Yeah, and the frustrating thing, especially when you've got guys like Stephen Miller or Richard Spencer who have varying degrees of seeming genuine actual Nazi enthusiasm, a lot of times when Nazi is invoked, it is definitely a kind of metaphorical – it's kind of a movie Nazi. I don't mean to say that it didn't happen, obviously. But you know what I mean? That it's just like a generic stand-in for super bad guy who
– Right.
Blank, you know?
Right. Yeah.
And so,
yeah,
when you're going to get into actual politics, it's like, oh, okay. Well, this is going to be a whole other thing to unwind. Like maybe Stalinist would be, sometimes a better label when someone's trying to do the go-to lefty evil. Don't you think?
What is Hollywood is like Stalinist Germany?
Or no, Stalinist Russia.
Stalinist Russia. Yeah.
But if you're going for a but actually a lot of times that's not what people, and I think people on the left would be disingenuous to say the same, that they never mean it as a metaphor. They never mean it in this
right
kind of, it's become a kind of cultural. It's like a term now. What do you say?
The thing is, too, is there has been such a such a that Nazis and communists were treated so much differently for no reason, considering that they both kind of ended up in the same place, is that if you said, oh my gosh, Los Angeles today is like Stalinist Russia, a lot of people would say, well, is that a problem? Do you mean that everyone has food and health care and education and high literacy rate? Is that what you mean?
I don't think most people would go – if you throw in the Stalinists, if you said 40s Russia or 50s Russia, maybe. I don't know. I mean I don't know. I actually know a little Russian history, so I would be like, well, that's not a great comparison.
I know you know, most people know. However – and I heard this a while ago. I don't think I made it up. I wish I did. is the difference between Nazis and fascism and communism is that nobody ever says, you know, fascism was really a good idea on
paper.
They just had a hard time executing it in principle. Nobody ever says that.
Well,
fascism or Nazism.
Steve Bannon, I would argue, is a guy who said similar things to that. I'm not kidding. I think Steve Bannon and Stephen Miller and those type guys, that's the sort of academic argument I could see them advancing.
I have never. I don't know where the Steve Bannon thing comes from.
He praises the leaders that are, he calls them, he praises these like out there leaders and tactics all the time.
I have never seen that. I've asked people to provide me with sources of why Steve Bannon is a white supremacist, and all I've ever gotten was that in his divorce proceedings, his soon to be ex wife said that he once said that he didn't want his kids going to school with Jews. That's pretty much.
We can do a sequel to this one sometime if you want. I'm not going to be able to Google this in the.
Maybe we need to start a blog so that when we get in arguments like this,
we follow it up
in the middle of a segment with the deadline rapidly approaching. We can say, yeah, we're going to finish this on the blog. Brian and I are going to finish this on the blog. And I'm not saying that Steve Bannon is not a Nazi. Okay,
sure.
I have friends that have had dealings with Mr. Bannon. And I have never heard a kind word about Mr. Bannon. So I just haven't seen the proof. That's all.
Sure.
And
I'm talking about, I think, for instance, like Richard Spencer is like an actual Nazi. Stephen Miller, there's some questionable stuff depending on how ironic you think he's being. But with Bannon, it's certainly he has encouraged, he's expressed enthusiasm for the tactics of fascism and say that they've just been misapplied. Essentially.
Okay.
That is a definite quote that I have read that for sure.
We'll just leave it there. Yeah. I got into a political argument with Tim Allen once.
I like this. I want to hear this.
I don't know if anybody on the knows this, but I started comedy in Detroit. I started at the Comedy Castle. I did a few open mics at other places before that, but the Comedy Castle was my first home club, as it was for Tim Allen. And I actually met Tim Allen while he was, I think he was probably already in the justice system when I met him, but he was still doing comedy. It had not come to a conclusion, and I was going to produce a show. I knew where there was a theater, and I was trying to put together a show, and
Wait,
I wanted Tim.
Do you mean he hadn't gone away yet, or he was in the process of coming back? Well, he hadn't gone away.
He
yet.
Had not. Yes, he had not gone away yet.
Ah.
So like I said, I don't know if I actually met him before it was, before he was even caught, you know.
Sure. You're lucky you didn't buy coke from him.
I never, you know what? That could probably be another episode. I never got into it. I did not see the fascination. It just.
It always looks awful to me, too. Never been a thing for me.
Yeah. So anyway, oh gosh, I gotta make this quick. So Tim Allen and I were talking politics. I can't even remember what the subject was. And this was years later. And he said something that I just went, oh, come on. You know, I can't believe that you believe that. And I have no idea what it was. Mm-hmm. But my final remark was, well, it's a good thing you can't vote.
Oh man. How did he take that?
I don't think I talked to him for about 10 years after that.
Well, That is a very nice way to end the first segment.
Second segment of the Rule of Three. We got soft pretzel news coming up.
Still a bad tease.
First of all, we do want to pay tribute to the man who has been credited, I think, with inventing rock and roll. The great Chuck Berry is now late.
Yes,
He of course was born in 1926, so in 1952 when he brought this new music form that borrowed heavily from the blues, as any rock historian will tell you, to the world in 1952. He was 26 years old, and ironically, he outlived rock and roll.
Yeah, that's true. And rock and roll's famous for you don't live very long. Everybody after him died when they were 27, and he outlived everything, all of them, and everything that they did.
But yes, all of rock's greatest legends are now gone. And but more than that, I believe that he outlived rock and roll.
Yeah.
There was a big thing, oh, rock and roll will never die. It's in the 50s they were saying, oh yeah, this is just a fad. This is just going to be over in about 5 years. And then into the 60s, then people were getting mocked for saying rock and roll, people who would die. And in the 70s, people were saying, then it was rock and roll will never die. And then it was, the anthem. Mm. And then in the 80s, it looked like rock and roll was dying. And it was getting pretty pathetic. I thought it was pretty much over. Our mutual friend actually told me one night after a show, he said, listen to what the kids are listening to. They're listening to remakes of the Carpenters. He goes, rock and roll is dead. And at that point, I think in musical history, it appeared that it would be dead. And then all of a sudden, out of Seattle, some scraggly haired youths with flannel shirts all of a sudden started a new form of music that was known as grunge. And suddenly, rock and roll was revitalized, and it was new again. What was old was new again. It borrowed heavily from punk. It borrowed heavily from experimental. It was considered alternative, but it was just pure rock and roll was the grunge movement. And a lot of people said, "Well, this is the new wave," as it was probably called in the late 70s. This is it. This is the wave of rock and roll. But in retrospect, that was it. That wasn't the resurgence of rock and roll. That was the dirge of rock and roll.
It was the grand finale, if nothing else.
That was the grand finale of rock and roll. This is it, ladies and gentlemen. There is nothing more. Because for the life of me, I cannot come up with a band since the 90s that would be considered rock and roll, that would be considered popular. For me, I think rock and roll actually did not make it past the century.
I would agree and disagree. I would say the White Stripes would be a great example of it. But I would also say that at this point, I do think that doing rock and roll is kind of just another form of doing like American roots music. Like, there are still people who play bluegrass. And there's still new bluegrass bands. But they're effectively going back into a tradition. It's no longer a new thing that's constantly evolving and moving forward. It's a dive back.
Are you talking like Mumford and Sons?
Oh, everything from Alison Krauss to Mumford and Sons to all that, and whatever it was. But when you see somebody play in a bluegrass band, you don't think, boy, bluegrass is really a vital form. It's like, and I like it.
You know what rock and roll needed? Banjos.
Yeah. But I say that as a guy who likes bluegrass, but when you listen to bluegrass, you kind of know that you're hearing somebody tap into like old Americana. And at this point, yeah, I would agree that any rock and roll feels at this point like a American roots kind of look back, as opposed to what is going on now. And Jack White does both, by the way. He does this rock stuff, but then he does this kind of bluegrassy stuff. And to me, there's not much difference. He's kind of like playing in traditional music either way.
Yeah. He absolutely is. It's if I had to define Jack White, I would say that his music is also Detroit. Jack White is also Detroit. I never met Jack White, but we do have mutual friends. And I had some buddies that were in the music. Well, actually, two of the bands that we use, Elvis Hitler and Snake Out, that we use for our bumpers occasionally, and the Midals. Oh my gosh, what am I forgetting? All these bands that I use for the bumper segments, Jack White opened for.
Nice.
If I had to define him, some of them know him. Some of them are actually good friends with him. I believe Judy Davids of the Midals is a good friend of Jack White's. If I had to, oh my God, this is going to be the podcast that gets me in trouble. I just realized that. I'm going to get Tim Allen. I'm going to get the bands that we've been using for bumper music. I'm going to get them this. No, you just indicted me. You. Get Tim Allen. That story's not true.
Oh.
if I had to categorize Jack White's music, I would say it's garage grunge.
Yeah. Well, so he does a lot of different stuff now, but it's all now peppered with this different, you know, all different kind of forms of nostalgia that he kind of repurposes that I really like. But Chuck Berry, it's crazy. Like Chuck Berry, like his, you know, if you look back on it, Chuck Berry only has like three songs. Like every Chuck Berry song could be any other Chuck Berry song for the first 20 seconds. You ever think you're so sure that the Chuck Berry song that came on, like, oh, I know what this is. And you're like, oh no, never mind. No, it's a different one. Like, oh, it's Run, Run, Rudolph. I didn't even know we were this close to, I just assumed this was something about a car and a seatbelt. But at the same time, you can say that how many other thousands of songs basically sounded like the beginning of Chuck Berry songs as well, you know?
For me, I've heard this story. It's funny. It came up in Facebook again, and it was more people telling the story. I don't know if the story is just part of the Chuck Berry mythology. I don't think it was. But basically, Chuck Berry, when he would take a gig, he would expect the backup band to be provided.
Huh.
Is that he would just get off the plane with a guitar, and he would show up 10 minutes before showtime, plug in, and hope the band could follow him.
That is daring.
And not care if they couldn't, and then unplug his guitar and leave. Pick up his check and leave. And I find that kind of interesting because in those days, that's the way it was. You didn't tour with a band. You were a music star. It's, you know, I don't know if Buddy Holly toured with the Crickets, but I know there weren't any. Yeah. I know there weren't any Crickets on that plane.
Gremlins, right. Perhaps, exactly.
But no Crickets. So I don't know if that's how they did it. I would imagine that they all did. And it kind of reminds me of stand-up comedy in a way, is that comedy is different than music in the fact that we don't have equipment. We don't and we're
well, the good ones don't.
Well, I'll get into that in a second, maybe if we have time. But the we essentially just show up. And do our stuff, and then we have a hotel room, and then we get up the next morning and we leave and go on to the next gig, and that's unheard of as far as music, because musicians are expected to bring their own instruments, sometimes their own PA, load it all into a van, and here's your $150 for the four of you. I hope you can find a place to sleep tonight.
Totally.
And it's And comedy is getting that way, by the way. I actually I now have access to lights and PA if necessary. So
you don't always get a hotel depending on where you're going.
So I am not at the Chuck Berry level of comedy. And it's amazing that he was able to carry that. What do you mean? You don't know my songs? It's number one. I've been doing them for 60 years. They are the building blocks of all rock and roll music. You should know them like you know your times table, your multiplication tables. Number one. Number two, come on, man, it's three chords.
Right. It's the meat of which all other rock and roll music is made, which is pretty incredible. I saw Chuck Berry play, by the way. He played a halftime show at the Rams Stadium when the St. Louis Rams first moved to St. Louis.
Did they get him a backup band, or did you just the marching band backed him up?
It was a backup band.
And, we could probably hear more about that performance another time.
And on the final segment of Rule of Three, as promised, threatened. A story about a pretzel. And I want to start this story off by saying it's happened to me recently-ish, and the person that was involved in this was a very nice gentleman, and I harbor no ill will toward the fellow. I like him just fine, but just a little miscommunication about how things go. With no more caveats. I'm sitting there. I'm working at a show.
Oh, was there sound? Was there sound equipment, or did you have to bring your own?
No. Sound equipment was provided. Good, nice venue. Everything about this is fine. And then I'm about to go do my set, and someone from the venue comes to me, and the way the interview says, "Well, I hope you're not lactose intolerant." And I said, "Pardon?" I was just confused. He said, "Yeah, okay. So I'm gonna need you to go on stage and eat this pretzel. It's a soft pretzel with like the nuclear cheese."
Which I don't think has any lactose in it.
Oh, God, I probably doesn't. I was like, yeah, but I'm allergic to lead. and yellow dye number 27 or whatever. So he's like, just go eat some of the soft pretzel and talk about how good it is. And I was like, and I said, no. And then he's like, well, can you just pretend to eat the pretzel? I was like, no, that's worse. I'm not going to pretend.
Yeah, it's just like, who was it? Ali Sheedy, I think it was on, and I had a friend that had a huge crush on Ali Sheedy. And she was on.
Many friends did.
Pardon? No, she was on David Letterman, and she was talking about how she did a Burger King commercial. And she said, I'm like a vegetarian, and it was like awful because I had to spit it out after every bite. And he saw that, and he said, well, the crush is over. So that's exactly what you'd have to do, is have a bucket, and you'd have to try, oh,
yeah,
man, this pretzel is delicious. Turn around.
So I said.
And can I add something?
Sure.
Soft pretzels should be served with mustard.
Interesting. Cheese. Fair point as well.
Cheese on a pretzel.
Oh, well, in Minnesota, honestly, they riot if you don't give them cheese.
Okay.
In this whole neck of the woods, but it's funny. So I basically said like, hey man, I'll mention that you have them. That's fine. But that you know,
am not.
That's as far as we're going here.
It's the timing. It's impossible to time. You know, sometimes it's hard to get a sip of water in. You said, okay, I'm going to get a clap break here, and that's when I can take my sip of water. And then,
and then
all of a sudden, no, you're just sipping water in silence. It's like, oh, crap, can I get this water down quick enough to kind of start the next bit? That one didn't go. So I can't see being that good of not being derogatory here, but I think there are very few comics that could actually pull it off where you could actually – know where the clap break is going to be, assuredly know where the clap break is going to be, and know that it's going to last as long as the chewing and swallowing of a pretzel and rinsing it down so you don't, you know, the last thing you want.
Yeah, that's like a slow chew meal.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, and the last thing you want is, you got to drink the water. Otherwise, you know, they're going to be pretzel stuff in the screen of the microphone.
Right. No one's going to appreciate that. But it's funny, after I said no, the other comics were kind of staring at me. And one guy, he was kind of kidding. He goes, one day when they make the documentary about Brian Miller, I'll say, this was the moment I knew he had integrity.
You know, the least he could have said, I'll give you a buck for every pretzel you sell.
There might have been a gesture toward that.
Like that was made. It's okay, give me the pretzel. I will do such a commercial for that pretzel. And it's and by the way, my manager will be in the back counting the amount of pretzels that go out.
But like, it was overall, it was a very good show. But it was just one of the stranger requests, and it made me think, if club owners had some strange requests from you or managers or, you know, wait staff.
I have two stories that probably go along with that. Number one, I don't know if you know the comic's name, Larry Amoros.
I know the name.
Yeah.
I haven't met him.
He actually, I believe he was the talent coordinator for the Arsenio Hall show. I believe that's what he was doing. And had to leave in shame because he was hitting on the interns.
Oh.
And actually applying a little pressure. And it was an era where he might have been forgiven if the gender of the interns were different. Is back then that was a bit more of a scandal back then than it would be today. Today would be the same thing. Hit on interns, you hit.
Today would be a scandal for a different reason. Today would be a scandal because you just can't do that. You're not supposed to do that to anybody.
Yeah, exactly. But then it was like, oh my God, you know, not only was he hitting on interns, the wrong ones.
Yeah, you're right. That was the part of the scandal that probably
right.
Stuck.
And it was, you know, and it was. Well, I'm not going to go any further into that. But he actually, I worked with him in Chicago. I opened for him in Chicago back in the late '80s, I think it was. And he actually took a basket of something or other. It was fried. So it might have been fried cheese, I think, on stage because that would have been era appropriate. A basket of fried cheese sticks on stage, and ate the fried cheese sticks while he did his routine.
Just not to sell them, just to do it.
Just to do it. Just a little. I'm going to try doing this, and it was really interesting. And he was, you know, talking. He was offering them to people in the front row. Do you want some? Mm-hmm. And he actually said after the show, he said to me, he goes, "That kind of worked, didn't it?" And I go, "You don't do that before." He goes, "No, that was the first time I'm thinking of working it into the act."
Which, of course, if you get too popular, you're going to start eating 25 cheese sticks a night. You're going to die of a heart attack before you can move on to theaters.
But it was, it was kind of interesting to watch. And I think he did it the rest of the week. I don't know, like I said, I don't know if it became part of his act, but I think he did it the rest of the week. So that's story number one. Story number two, there was a guy that ran a real long running club here in town called Barrel of Laughs. Bill Brady was the proprietor and host of that long running comedy club. Started in the middle of the '70s and only closed a couple years ago. And he would actually and as much of a nice guy as Bill is. And much as I enjoyed working his club, thought it was a real fun room, it annoyed me that in between the middle act and the headliner, he would always say, "Ladies and gentlemen, it's tutor time." And he would bring out a rack of test tubes that had shots in them.
Oh.
And right now, the waitress is coming around with a rack of tutors. Today we have... And then he'd announce all the flavors that they have, and then go from table to table. Do you want to do a tutor? Which, you know, it's a great, yeah. That's the audience is primed. So let's bring it to a screeching halt and get them a little drunker before. Before we bring up the main act of the evening, and I hated it.
No, that's terrible.
And
that's terrible. A shot. For people who are already might not need any more booze, which means they're going to be terrible for you in the next 5 minutes.
Yeah. And it's it turns out there wasn't – it was mostly just sugar – it was flavored sugar water. Very little.
Sure.
Very little alcohol. But it's like, you know, I will give you the amount of money that you – because I've counted how many you actually sell.
Right.
I will give you the money if you don't do if you don't do tutor time. But it was
I'll just do all those tutors myself.
Yeah. But it was he was so much ingrained into his act. It was so much a part of the show. I think he did just that. He had a couple jokes, he had a couple funny flavors that he did jokes about, and I think it was more part of his routine than actual sales, but that's the other pitching from the stage.
For some people, there's no difference at all.
Anyway, on that note, I think that's about it. If you're in the Minnesota area, in about 2 weeks from tomorrow, or probably today by the time I get this podcast up, Crash and Burn, the sixth installment of the series, Patrick King, from Comedy Central, and Martha Kelly, who is a star of Baskets. I started watching the show. I figured I could not meet Martha Kelly without having seen Baskets, so...
Maybe we should do a basket segment next week.
That's a good idea. I think we will.
All right.
Have you watched it? Have you been watching it?
I've seen one. I want to watch some more. They just popped up on Hulu. I'm excited to check it out.
Okay. Yeah. Let's watch some Baskets between this week and next, and we'll talk about it.
Sure.
Because it's an interesting series. It is not what I expected it to be.
So, no, and it's got Louis Anderson, a big Minnesota star, on it as well. So.
In the role of his life, if he doesn't get an Emmy for that role, it's fixed. so we'll just tease that for next week. But if you want to listen to some previous episodes, they're all up on timslegel.com, also on iTunes,
and over at BrianMillerCounty.com with a Y, and Real Brian Miller on Twitter.
We'll see you next week. Thank you.